starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. Living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching the coast, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Thursday, September 3rd, 2015. This is Deanna Spingola broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Please visit SpingolaSpeaks.net to access the audio files of my program. The site was created and is maintained by a friend and listener. There is a tab at the top titled Your Health Matters, which is the comprehensive list of external websites. It also has a wonderful list of Kindle books that have been written by my guests. I hope that you will order your Amazon books via this list. By subscribing to SpingolaSpeaks.net, one will receive an email announcing the addition of new audio files. Please also visit ScreeningSandyHook.net, a website created by the same person. One may subscribe to ScreeningSandyHook.net, at which I will be posting concise bits of information that I think the listeners will benefit from. I really do not address many of the claims that people make about Sandy Hook. It really does not matter what we believe about Sandy Hook. However, we do need to comprehend exactly what the government is enacting in the way of legislation that affects all of us, our children, grandchildren, spouses, aunts, uncles, literally everyone. That is why I named the book Screening Sandy Hook Causes and Consequences. Please also visit my website, spingola.com, to see the guest schedule for my radio programs, including dates, times, and call-in numbers, plus information about my four books. Apparently, people are having a difficult time trying to figure out how to call into my program. But it's pretty easy. Just Google my name. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, spingola.com, or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. You may call into the program with questions or comments at 646-787-1915. But please wait until I open the phone lines. And, of course, at the beginning of every single program, I do announce that number, and hopefully I will repeat it. Remember to repeat it during the program so that you'll know where to call in. My Twitter account is twitter.com/DeannaSpingola. I don't tweet a lot. I don't know. I have the same feeling about Twitter as I do about Facebook. But I do use it because, well, I think it's important to let people know what we're talking about. All righty. I guess the theme music at the beginning of the program was having some hiccups. I don't know whether it was just my computer or whether people in the chat room noticed. I'm not sure. Let me just say hi to the people in the chat room. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. All righty. Today I'm going to continue reading from the book. It's a booklet, actually. It's called The Myth of the Innocent Civilian by Harold Thomas. It was written in 2002, and I did correspond with him right after I purchased about 10 or 15 copies of this little booklet. I thought it was a very, very important little booklet, and it really kind of stated, well, my beliefs also, so I really found it very interesting. And so I thought I would share it with you. It is available as a PDF file, and I believe that I have listed that the URL where you can get a download of the PDF file. Anyway, let me just check. I see people are Skyping me. Okay, I'll get to Skype later. Anyway, on with the booklet, The Myth of the Innocent Civilian by Harold Thomas, and I am starting on page 35. And anyway, most war, as we think of it, is allowed, let me just turn on another light here, is allowed to unfold to gain an economic advantage. That type of war can be managed within reasonable limits. It is relatively civil. I think my eyes are improving or something. I'm not sure. I do wear reading glasses, but all of a sudden they're just, I can see better without them. Okay, I guess I've been eating sufficient number of carrots. Okay, the conduct and outcome of such wars can be negotiated in a relatively civil manner because the folks behind the scenes, although willing to risk a great deal, are usually not crazy. They carefully calculate the odds at each critical juncture. They have no qualms about thinning out the population, but serious qualms when it comes to wiping themselves out economically. They know when to hold them and know when to fold them, so to speak. We're not talking about politicians and generals here, but rather those who buy and sell, make and break the politicians and generals. Okay, I need to tell my person this is showtime, buddy. Showtime. Just like they're saying, leave me alone. I just posted the wrong message to the wrong window. Sorry about that. But anyway, let me just. Okay. Oh, this is going to be one of those days. Okay. When violence erupts over principles and defense of a belief system or way of life, civilized conduct and negotiated outcomes are far less likely. Some people believe that their creator gave them a responsibility to resist evil, even if they have virtually no chance militarily, economically, or even in the marketplace of ideas. One of the greatest dangers to mankind in the 21st century is the disregard of and, indeed, contempt for such peoples on the part of Western multinational corporate capitalism and the governments whose military establishments protect its interests. Okay, hang on. I'm trying to multitask. Oh, shoot. Oh, goodness. Hang on just a minute. Okay. Oh, shoot. Okay. Where are we? Okay. In their day-to-day lives, in their immediate physical environment, most Americans have no discernible enemies. It is always possible that there could be governments and other organizations that pose a genuine physical threat to the American people. However, it is virtually impossible for the people to know this for themselves. They must depend almost entirely upon information provided by government and the mainstream media. In all of human behavior, what can be more serious than supporting acts of violence against people in faraway places, or for that matter, at home? And is there not a profound moral responsibility to be absolutely sure of both the accuracy and urgency of the situation before perpetrating acts of death and destruction upon other human beings? How difficult does this become when one is at the mercy of sources of information that cannot be verified? What if those sources have lied to you at other times and on other issues, and you know it? Well, of course we know it. They lie all the time. What if both intuition and available facts tell you that your government has not been lying to you, but may have been involved in creating the very, not only lying to you, but may be involved in creating the very danger it now says will require the use of violence? Is it morally justifiable to support your government's acts of violence against people anywhere when, number one, you are not in immediate physical danger? Number two, you feel strongly that you cannot trust your government. And number three, you have no way to verify the information the government is providing as its excuse for violence. Throughout the history of so-called civilized societies, Rulers, governments, and official information sources have provided innocent civilians with patriotic, heart-swelling, tear-jerking pretexts for hating and killing and conquering the enemy. It is appalling how easily government and the media manage to convince a majority of the people that such and such a country or such and such a people constitute some kind of dire threat to national security or the national interest and must be attacked. People buy into this or go along with it or ignore it, even when they themselves cannot verify one shred of evidence to confirm the government's claims. Does ignorance equate to innocence? Should civilians be considered innocent because of their ignorance of what happened, what's happening, and what's going to happen? There is an interesting little problem with the word ignorance. Ignorance is a condition. The word is a noun form of the verb ignore, which Webster's New World Dictionary defines as follows: to disregard deliberately, pay no attention to, refuse to consider. Interesting. Somewhere along the line, popular usage decided to stop treating ignorance as a willful condition. Now, that is very interesting. A society's language evolved based upon its mutually influencing values, attitudes, and behaviors, does it not? What are some of the values, attitudes, and behaviors in Western society that minimize or eliminate any sense of responsibility? Hedonism, materialism, narcissism, hypocrisy, certainly all of these. But moral relativism has to be number one. No one is responsible for their behavior. A perfectly good reason exists for everything people do. And if there is any responsibility, it falls upon society as a whole or some dark archetype that only science may one day harness by unraveling the human genome. Blah, blah, blah. Bottom line, there is no such thing as responsibility. And an ignorant civilian is, therefore, an innocent civilian. If ignorance is to be considered willful, then ignorance of the law is no excuse. Indeed, if ignorance is, indeed, an innocent condition, then ignorance of the law is the ultimate excuse. If law is too vague, convoluted, voluminous, or deceptive to even be knowable, then weak people will scurry around pretending to obey it. Average people will ignore it. People will resist it. Great people will attack it. And at this point, where do we fall in this? Are we brave? Great? Average? What are we? I like the word scurry. Scurry reminds me of rats. Okay. Somebody in the chat room said, I hear that kombucha can improve one's eyesight. Yeah. I'm sure. I'm sure that the vitamins and minerals and all the stuff that I consume every single day has to be doing something beneficial. Anyway. I hope it is. When government is drumming up support for campaigns of violence, it typically spreads information that will alarm people so they will support the government. And I think that this is very applicable to just about anything. Fear really provokes people to pay attention to government, to run out and get your flu shot or do whatever the government says. And it's just they use fear. Okay, preemptive kinds of fear, prophylactic kinds of things. Oh, do this or this might happen. Take cholesterol-lowering medication so you won't have a heart attack or some other silly thing. Typically, people have little choice but to accept the government's word, even when the information makes no sense or is hard to believe. Keep in mind, most people are already somewhat intimidated by their own government. In an atmosphere of uncertainty and alleged threats, average people just cave in and not only condone, but enthusiastically support violence by their government against whomever their government proclaim to be the bad guys. Only brave people will resist the will of the lying, threatening government. Great people who resist mad or evil government have a fair chance of being murdered by that government if it is not overthrown. Wow. To commit or support actual violence against other people based solely upon vague fears or unproved suspicions that they could or might be a threat would seem to be the very definition of paranoia. If those fears or suspicions are based upon unverifiable information from sources known to be suspect, then involvement in or support of such violence would seem irresponsible and unprincipled at best, cowardly and faithless, perhaps. How Christian is a society that is willing to bomb women and children of another culture on the pretext that their leaders may pose a threat, when that very pretext is being supplied by known liars who have provable conflicts of interest? Who is an innocent civilian in such a society? History is replete with events that started this and that war. Most are simplistic lies. The real reason bankers started cranking out the money, well, I don't believe. I'm going to read what it says, but I'm not. Anyway, I'll just go ahead. The real reasons bankers started cranking out money so Hitler, Mussolini, Tojo, Churchill, and Roosevelt could build millions of bombs and planes and tanks and guns will likely never be published by any respectable publishing house, at least not for the next century or so. Meanwhile, the public is simply and plainly brainwashed. They are fighting for their country without the slightest clue as to why, but they are innocent, these civilians. Money from the bankers. In fact, he tried to avoid World War II numerous times. Okay. So, as the Cold War largely froze out the Third World from any hope of competing economically or militarily with the West, and as Western banking interests were rapidly and rather secretively completing a virtual economic conquest of the rest of the world, including the soon-to-be former Soviet Union, a bizarre, dehumanizing phenomenon was beginning to occur on a regular basis. Beginning with the Vietnam War, entire populations have been able to relax in the comfort and safety of their own homes and watch their warriors bomb and kill and capture their enemies. Video footage of war is most often supremely sanitized, sparing the viewer such gut-wrenching realities as the smell of burning flesh or the screams of the dying. After, why should innocent civilians have to taste what their military is dishing out to their enemies? The talking heads on TV have clearly laid out the case against the enemies of the people, have they not? Anyone who pays careful attention to media news reports can cite chapter and verse about the evil deeds of the enemy, which, of course, is what they did with Germany. The media fill the public consciousness with all manner of palpable government lies about casualty figures, the dastardly deeds of the enemy, and the humanitarian risks and heroism of our forces. No one objects to the lies and the propaganda. To do so is unpatriotic. In time of war, you are either with us or against us. As George W. Bush said, axis of evil, how about the syntaxis of evil? To most governments, it is in extremely poor taste to kill innocent civilians. After all, they are non-combatants and not fair game. Well, that is, unless our military leaders decide it is necessary to blow up an entire city or other target in which innocent civilians are magically transformed into collateral damage. Looking for religious references for this subject? Try the Old Testament. As far as I can tell, the God of the Old Testament made no allowances for innocent civilians. As the story goes, he granted to his chosen people title to certain possessions and lands then inhabited by other groups of people who were not chosen, people with different beliefs and customs not acceptable to the God of the Old Testament. The God of the Old Testament was apparently not a big fan of multiculturalism. So, through his prophets, the God of the Old Testament instructed his chosen people to invade the lands he gave to them and kill everything in sight. Men, women, children, the elderly, the lame, pregnant women, retarded people, their pets, even livestock. No Geneva Convention with this God, no innocent civilians. Of course then, thank heaven, along comes the God of the New Testament and commands his followers to love their enemies and do good to them that spitefully use you. In other words, treat everyone as an innocent civilian. Talk about turning over a new leaf. At one point, he did say something to his disciples about taking up a sword, but it's not entirely clear to me what Christ would have had to say about the decisions to firebomb Dresden and nuke Hiroshima and Nagasaki, murdering several hundred thousand innocent civilians, all theoretically children of God, created in his image. It's not entirely clear to me what Christ would have to say about any number of things done by Western Christian nations. Okay, let me just check the chat room. Let's see. Okay. Alrighty. Okay. And let me just check my Skype. And let me check the email. Oh, goodness. I love being a one-woman show here. I don't really. But it's the way that things go. All righty. America's version of the war with Japan, for example. There's no email and no new Skype messages. Okay. America's version of the war with Japan, for example, says that Japan staged a surprise attack on the day that will live in infamy. A substantial body of evidence indicates that this is an American myth. In fact, an outright lie. That, in fact, multinational corporate capitalism and American military interventionism put Japan in a position in the Far East where a military confrontation with America was inevitable. That, in fact, many American leaders and political insiders knew perfectly well that they had called Japan's bluff both economically and militarily in the Far East, that, in fact, some kind of military strike by Japan was a certainty, that, in fact, Roosevelt himself had advanced knowledge of the strike against Pearl Harbor and suppressed the information, knowing that public outrage over the attack would propel the United States into World War II, which was actually just a continuation of World War I. I mean, it started in 1914 and ended in 1945, with just a little brief time in between, so that America and England could build a whole bunch of really big, big bombs and get all ready so they could go after those terrible, terrible Nazis. All righty. If you find these assertions offensive and obnoxious, so do I. But if you cannot any research that disproves them, then I can only rely upon my own research that leaves the foregoing conclusions quite unavoidable. And I've covered a lot of this in my third book, although I didn't talk much about Japan. I actually have enough for another book, but we'll see. Anyway, sure, there is an abundance of conspiracy theories on almost any topic, especially those involving power, politics, or money. Conspiracy theories, however, are a lot like official government explanations. The spokesman always has a reason why you can't see the evidence. This makes finding the truth a tedious, if not impossible, task. However, sifting through the vast array of reports, allegations, and theories from individual people as well as organizations around the world, one truth becomes inescapable. Government lies, and most of the people in positions of power in government are either in denial, are willfully ignorant, or are outright evil. How's that for a conspiracy? Why such an outrageous statement? Because many or most conspiracy theories could be put to rest in a flash if government were willing to tell the truth and be forthcoming with the public. It is not. Time and again, it hides behind a wall of arrogant denials, outright lies, and even brazen refusal to answer at all. One wonders if government actually relies upon, maybe even concocts and promotes, so-called conspiracy theories in order to confuse people, create a sense of befuddlement amidst the public, and embrace what pitiful credibility it does have. The lies go in literally every direction and are confirmed and protected by virtually all those on whom Western society keeps its praise and honor. Okay, let me just, they are also blackmailed. People are blackmailed. And somebody else says, I always wondered about those parts in the Old Testament. I thought the residents of the Promised Land must have been extremely wicked. And it does kind of make you wonder, doesn't it? Okay. The lies go in literally every direction and are confirmed and protected by virtually all those on whom Western society heaps its praise and honors. Yeah, you have to admit, I mean, look at the people who get the Nobel Peace Prize and all the other prizes. It's like the Academy Awards. A bunch of people get together and they applaud one another and give each other big awards. How objective is that? After many years and thousands of hours of research, I can only conclude that the Western democracies, the pillars of multinational corporate capitalism, are moral and spiritual dunghills. Oh, I love that word, dunghill. Oh, that's a nice word. That's almost as good as scurry. They are neither praiseworthy nor honorable, being run by hypocrites and murderers, some of the most self-serving madmen and cowardly terrorists on the planet. There are tens of millions of decent, caring civilians in America alone who continue to be brainwashed and befuddled. They love their families, their children, their friends and neighbors. They have no conscious desire to go to war with anyone. There are billions of such people around the world, all of whom share the same tragic fate. To be brainwashed, befuddled, terrorized, and manipulated by evil rulers, governments, and institutions run by egomaniacs and sociopath. Yet, can all these kind, decent human beings, these civilians, really be innocent and bear no responsibility for the crimes perpetrated against their very self-fictions known as government that they themselves have allowed, have built, and funded, have encouraged, and tolerated? Tens of millions of Americans attend and belong to churches. In order for members to write off contributions on their income tax returns, virtually every church in America is licensed under Internal Revenue Code Section 501c3. Said licensing includes strict regulation and prohibition of certain subjects that churches will avoid if they wish to maintain their licensing. Licensing. Yes, we have to get a license to do just about anything. And the churches also get licensed. Alrighty, the faithful seem to believe that God has nothing to say about politics, or if he does, he is perfectly willing to shut up about it so his sheep don't lose their tax deduction. What kind of God are we dealing with here? Ministers and leaders of these churches have a variety of mind-numbing explanations for the befuddling Jekyll and Hyde Judeo-Christian tradition that has ostensibly guided American morals since colonial days. Now, the term Judeo-Christian was really only used after World War II. There's nothing, I mean, it's an oxymoron, okay? Ministers may not mow, that's what it says. Ministers may not mow as much hay as politicians during times of war, but they aren't far behind. Ministers will go on and on about how war is not the answer and the heart of man must be changed. But there are few, if any, ministers who will pass to their congregations any information that would place the blame for international strife equally, if not squarely, on their own government, or, perish the thought, on themselves. My country, right or wrong, my church, right or wrong, my paycheck, right or wrong, my tax deduction, right or wrong, red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in his sight. Oh, that is unless our economy needs their oil or their leaders are resisting the free market economy. In other words, run their country. Then, of course, these people are no longer precious in his sight, but pretty much in our way. Bring home the missionaries and send in the cruise missiles. These poor, ignorant heathens have suddenly transformed themselves into dangerous terrorists who must be hunted down and killed to protect freedom. Jesus loves the little children. On the other hand, if the government decides to kill several hundred thousand of them to teach their leader a lesson, well, God has commanded us to obey those in authority over us. So, onward, Christian soldiers. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Oh, and remember to not talk about any of this in church. We don't want to jeopardize our tax deductions. Some of the early colonists who brought the gospel of Christ to America then proceeded to live by the law of the jungle, behaving far more like the chosen of the God of the Old Testament than disciples of the God of the New Testament. In addition to reviling and persecuting each other over vague doctrinal issues that reasonable people could agree to disagree over, they had a rather unchrist-like habit of getting rid of people who made them uncomfortable by accusing them of being witches and burning them at. Americans had the twisted idea that liberty gave them the right to go where other people were already living, murder them, steal their land, and then justify their pillage by pronouncing the innocent civilians to be spiritually inferior savages. They introduced the American Indian to the golden rule of multinational corporate capitalism. If you can't compete, you die. and proceeded to treat them about as well as the buffalo, skinning them and leaving their carcasses to rot on the plains. American pioneers had innocent civilian casualties. Not so the American Indians. Their women, children, elderly, lame, blind, retarded, infants, you name it, all deserved to die because they wanted to be free, wanted to be left alone, and were unwilling to play ball with Western multinational corporate capitalism or the New World Order, which then went under the name colonialism. Ministers' explanations notwithstanding, I'll need to hear what Christ thinks about all this out of his own mouth before I can even begin to reconcile it with his spiritual teachings. Christ taught, love thy neighbor as thyself. I don't recall any caveats like, unless your neighbor gets in the way of economic expansion. It isn't this good stuff. I mean, I just simply have to agree with all of this because, well, he's got a lot of good points here. I guess that's why I really like this little booklet. I hope that you will share the PDF file with, well, everyone that you know. We need to wake people up, and this little booklet might play a part in doing that. Okay, back to the text. The closer to home, the more the expression innocent civilian drips with emotionally charged images and irresistible presumptions. It is more than a euphemism. It is at times an outright lie. The ultimate palliative for fear and superstition. An excuse for hatred and violence. Our civilians are innocent. Theirs are collateral damage. Oh, that is a nice. Our civilians are innocent. Theirs are collateral damage. We can bomb the infrastructure of a third world enemy into the dark ages, resulting in the deaths of tens of thousands of children, and never see the expression innocent civilians in our government's press release. The Secretary of State of the United States of America can go on national TV, and when confronted with statistics of the deaths of tens of thousands of children as a direct result of the American bombing and embargo of Iraq, make the shocking statement. It was worth it. Not only is there no meaningful outcry from the American people over this despicable situation, if one believes the polls, Americans can hardly wait for us to go to war over there and bomb them some more. Because W says Iraq supports terrorism. Oh, gosh. What hypocrisy, irony, when you look at all of the wars that the United States, the government of the United States, has created, has implemented, has provoked, has, look at all the countries that we have gone to war against. Starting with our own country. Yes, the North invaded the South. 700,000 people died. Okay, back to the text. Our corporations can conspire with ruthless dictators to steal the resources and perpetuate the poverty of people we will never see face to face. Yet, the soldiers of the multinational corporate capitalism, the corporate employees, retain the untouchable status of innocent civilian. Language is both shield and sword. It can be used to hide behind, and it can be used paint one's victims in whatever light justifies their slaughter. Human beings have a tendency to group together in various artificial constructs, including families, churches, towns, corporations, nations, etc. artificial entities develop their own interests. Historically, in any association of people, one or a few will be decidedly smarter, stronger, and more aggressive. By what means or other, such folks always wind up running the show. The masses tolerate being ruled in varying degrees and styles. Some are quite content to be subservient subjects as long as their existence is not too miserable. In fact, a vast number of human beings have passed their existence in this life quite content to toil and even die for a ruler accepted as superior, benevolent, and even divine. Other people apparently need to believe they are free and can choose or replace their leaders, thus compelling the strong and aggressive among them to subordinate their selfish interests to the interests of those who have chosen or elected them to lead. While that may actually work in small settings where people really know each other and can keep track of who's doing what, there is abundant evidence that so-called democracy on any large scale is little more than a fraud perpetrated by con men and tolerated by fools. Oh, is that expressive of exactly what politics is in this country? Yes, democracy is little more than a fraud perpetrated by con men and tolerated by fools. Even the Republic, wherein public servants are bound by oath to stay within the bounds of the written law, finds its agenda taken over by the strong and aggressive when its mechanisms become unwieldy and its people inattentive. Wow, that's a wonderful paragraph. Also, I hope that all of the listeners have access to the PDF file of this pamphlet, this booklet. Maybe somebody could post it in the chat room just so that everyone will have access to it. Perhaps without exception in human history, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely, or so the saying goes. Over time, the folks who run a national corporation or a small business, an empire, or a village have a tendency to get increasingly greedy, conniving, and ruthless. Leaders have a tendency to use the labors of the rest of the group with or without its knowledge to pursue ends that many of the people might find reprehensible if they knew the details. Who is responsible when an association of people engages in behavior that is viewed as wrong, unwanted, or harmful by another association of people? Corporations battle it out in court. Nation states have wars. What can a culture be expected to do when it determines that it is being economically, politically, socially, morally, and spiritually subjugated, even annihilated? What if that culture reaches the terrifying conclusion that at least 1 billion people are shoveling coal into the engine of a military-industrial machine that has bought off their leaders as well as the upper classes of their societies and is steamrolling their culture into oblivion? What if they see themselves as having zero chance of competing, compromising, or even communicating with this machine? What if that culture concludes that the people fueling the machine are, for the most part, ignoramuses whose past includes the slaughter of the American Indian culture and, more recently, the only recorded use of weapons of mass destruction against a foreign people? What if that culture concludes that attempts to awaken the people of this society to the corruption of its leadership have proven utterly futile? How desperate do you suppose you would be if you saw your culture's chances of survival as slim to none? Would you be inclined to view the citizens fueling the military-industrial machine destroying your culture as innocent civilians? They won't listen. They ridicule you when you try to reason with them. They only want to have their government shut you up or bomb you into the dark ages so they can have a clear conscience and cheap gasoline with which to make their next trip to Disneyland. Innocent civilians, indeed. There are perhaps several million Americans of conscience who do not see Islam as the only culture described above. Innocent has a wonderful ring to it, evoking images of young children frolicking at play, pretending to kill each other, but guilty of nothing because they cannot possibly understand the significance of what they are acting out. One hears the expression, a guilt-ridden society. Is America a guilt-ridden society? Perhaps. Generations of young people have rebelled against alleged guilt trips and have tossed out their parents' values. Generations of parents have felt guilty for doing such a lousy job of passing their values on to their children. From their point of view, some critics see guilt as the dirty little secret of organized religion. Organized religion, of course, sees lack of guilt as the damning flaw of liberal New Age philosophy. Liberals accuse conservatives of peddling guilt based on bigoted, narrow-minded religious notions. Wow, conservatives accuse liberals of peddling guilt based upon a naive, phony, socialist agenda. This battle is nothing more than an impotent academic exercise in name-calling. Two spoiled brats yanking on opposite ends of a toy until it is torn apart and useless to anyone. In the real world where government drops bombs and makes deals with murderers, both liberals and conservatives take no responsibility for the behavior of their government. Both eagerly embrace the same innocent civilian status. While the definition of guilt may be left to philosophers to debate, one thing appears certain. People do not want to feel guilty. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, people may have graduated from being guilt-ridden to being guilt-averse. Just like when one is exposed to too much of something and becomes allergic to it. This may explain the appeal and power of the word innocent. One who is guilt-averse will understandably crave feeling innocent. When such people are told that they are innocent, they will zealously embrace the notion without ever even asking. Innocent what? Innocent civilians are innocent of? Does it really matter as long as they are innocent? Guilt has a great deal to do with opinions. In matters of conscience, one's own opinion. In matters of emotion, the opinion of loved ones. In matters of law, the opinions of the court. When it comes to absolute right and wrong, the Creator's opinion would appear to be the only one that counts, and most of us will just have to wait until we're dead to be absolutely sure about that. Karl Marx apparently believed religion to be the opiate of to a guilt averse people. Feeling justified may be the most powerful opiate. This may explain government propaganda, especially in times of war. Anything as amorphous and hysterical as a war on terror needs lots of innocent civilians. But more than that, it needs ignorant civilians. Virtually any time there is violence anywhere in the world, government and media trot out the expression innocent civilian to describe the folks they want to cozy up to, the folks they want to sell protection to. In a variety of subtle and not so subtle ways, government and media are constantly reminding people that they are threatened, vulnerable, and innocent. And that government is their only hope for peace and safety. convinced that they are threatened and vulnerable, most people will readily accept an offer of protection from any powerful entity in their lives, especially one that is reassuring them of their innocence. Set up in this way, citizens will be inclined to condone and support actions by their government, turn the page here, that they themselves would have neither the audacity nor the stomach to carry out. Okay, let's see. Somebody talked about Lincoln and Springsteen. That is kind of a myth. It is not possible to verify that. It wasn't ever really his real name, but just like I say, it was not verified. It was a myth. But anyway, he was still a dirty, rotten guy. He was a scoundrel, killed thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in his own country. So it doesn't matter whether his name was Springsteen, Jones, Lincoln, whatever. He was a filthy, rotten scoundrel. Okay. Wars and other acts of organized violence by governments can occur because people lend their support to these governments. A government is a legal fiction. It is only an idea, a plan, a purpose. People fill every position in every government on earth. People fill every rank in every branch of the military of every nation. Civilians supply the goods and services without which no government or military could exist or function at all. For centuries, kings, emperors, and dictators, as well as elected leaders, have built armies from treasuries filled by the taxes paid over by people, whether paid willingly, begrudgingly, ignorantly, or fearfully. Taxes are paid over by people who have chosen to do so. Okay? Have chosen to do so. Every human being has a choice whether to participate in or support the actions of their government and its military. People may recognize government propaganda for what it is and dismiss it out of hand. However, at a minimum, they surely know that their government is using military weaponry against people halfway around the world for reasons that are unclear, inconsistent, and don't pass the smell test. Is it unreasonable to expect taxpayers to notice that today's enemy is none other than our ally from a few years ago? The folks we sold all the arms to so that they could do battle with the enemy, who is today our ally. Actually, that's kind of a false statement. The United States did not sell arms to the Iraqis. The Iraqis said, no thanks. They offered him a deal, but the Iraqis decided not to take it. And we've talked about that on other programs. Do the people funding the madness have zero responsibility for it? Few people are ever involved in the actual creation of their government. The vast majority are born into a society that already has an existing form of government. Whatever system they grow up in becomes accepted as the status quo. They may be liked or disliked, but the vast majority of people just accept what they inherit in the way of government. Does that absolve them of responsibility for the actions of their government? Do people have a responsibility to dig out the truth about what their government is doing with a vast wealth it confiscates from the people? Or is it morally defensible for people to have a my country, right or wrong attitude and assume that whatever the government does with the money is all right, as long as the nation's economy is good? The same can be said about any artificial entity, whether it be a government, an army, a corporation, an association, a fraternity, or even a church. Can it be morally acceptable to ignore the behavior and effects of any entity supported by the fruits of one's labor. Yikes. The idea that only combatants are fair game in a war is just a lot of silly poppycock promulgated by people who benefit from the existing rules of war. If an artificial entity is sending combatants to enslave you or destroy your way of life, then everyone who works for or supports that artificial entity in any way is fair game. How can it be any other way? Throughout recorded history, and for largely dishonest and selfish reasons, ruling classes, elected or not, have sent young people off to kill and be killed. People have always had the choice to refuse to kill each other, especially for the trumped-up, dishonest reasons offered by their leaders. People have the choice to demand answers, but tragically, in most cases, they just swallow their leaders' lies and march off to kill each other. Even more tragically, government leaders only lie about the circumstances of war, but it is all too often their own selfish, evil agenda that has precipitated the war in the first place. And I think I was on a program a couple of days ago, and we were talking about how I happened to get interested in war and why typically women don't become, they don't want to research warfare or talk about warfare or think about warfare. But when I was doing family history research, I discovered that several of my ancestors, but one in particular that really struck me to the core, John Phelps. He was a Southerner. Yeah. And when somebody is attacking your country or your part of the country or you, a particular people, then you have a responsibility to defend yourself. And that is what the South was doing. That's what John Phelps, my second great grandfather, was doing. And he was killed in the very worst battle of the entire so-called Civil War, and that was at Antietam, also known as Sharpsburg. It was the single bloodiest battle of the war. And in my book, the first one in the trilogy, I wrote about John Phelps, and I wrote a chapter, and the chapter is, hang on just a second, I can't remember the chapter. I have a tendency to, once I complete something, I just go on with another task. But one of the statements of probably a 16-year-old soldier, a Southern soldier, he said, when a Union soldier rolled him over, he said, "We would never have come up there." And I believe that's true. The South would never, ever have invaded the North. They simply wanted to live the way that they were living. The war was never about slavery. It was not about slavery until a year into the war. It was corporatism. It was the beginning of corporatocracy in this country, immediately followed the so-called Civil War. Anyway, that just kind of broke my heart when I was reading about my ancestor. And you know, when you start doing family history, you start feeling a connection to your past, and you start feeling because of them, you are who you are. You have embraced their values. And what that soldier said was, We never would have come up there. And that is true. The South would never have invaded the North. But anyway, I was so touched by the story of my ancestor. And I had to dig in a lot of records. And also, the entire so-called Civil War, I mean, it changed the lives of individuals, of people. It wasn't just about, 700,000 people died. No, it was what it did to families, what it did to individuals, what it did to children. So that's how I got interested in warfare and why I have written so much about warfare. Okay, back to the text. I do get emotional. That's just me. I'm an emotional woman. And does ignorance equate to innocence? What responsibility do people have to verify what their government is telling them? What if the government has lied to the people and convinced them to support and or participate in a campaign of violence against people in a foreign country? Does no guilt attach to the citizen or soldier when the need for that violence has been misrepresented or even fabricated? Let me just check my Skype. Skype, okay. Hang on just a sec. All righty. Just a little note from a friend about a conference. From Janice Barcello. A wonderful, wonderful person. Terrific person. We'll have to have her on the program again. Okay. as long as I'm checking things out, let me see if there's any phone calls, although I haven't opened the phone line. But we can go ahead and open the phone lines. And let me check email. Okay, let's see. All right. Are citizens completely unaccountable for the unnecessary and unjustified killing of human beings just because they were doing their patriotic duty? These are questions we have to ask ourselves. Okay? Who are the innocent civilians? Were the tens of thousands of German civilians murdered in the despicable carpet bombing of Dresden innocent? Hang on. Oh, okay. I'm not talking loud enough. Okay. Okay, let me just turn myself up here. Okay. Is that better? Is that better? Let me know, okay? Okay. Were the people in Dresden innocent? Well, I think they were. I think they were. They certainly didn't deserve what they were getting, and they went to war to defend themselves, okay? Relatively, perhaps, but only when compared to the monsters who incinerated them. Their creator may inquire as to what they could or should have done to stop the madman running the German government. As I said, we have I have a different opinion. Were the elderly women and children turned to ashes at Hiroshima innocent, perhaps, but again, only one compared to the monsters who turned them into the ultimate cannon fodder in order to show the Russians that we had the bomb. The creator may ask some of these poor, charred innocents why they allowed their emperor to bully neighboring countries, to murder and to steal, and ultimately embroil the Japanese people in a hopeless, bloody contest with Western multinational corporate capitalism. Am I talking loud enough? Okay. Let me know if I am, okay? Or not. For many decades, huge multinational corporate interests have been literally taking over small countries through bribes and political intrigue. It is not uncommon for these multinational corporations to buy up or acquire control over literally everything of value in a small country. Part of the process involves buying off the relatively small upper class and solidifying its control, thus leaving the have-nots, or lower classes, in a somewhat hopeless condition of economic servitude. This is all legal and is most often accomplished without the use of any covert military action or war. Yet it is obvious that the people in such countries could easily view these foreign corporations as an invading mortal enemy. How would you view a foreign corporation that came into your homeland, allied itself with an existing corrupt ruling class, monopolized virtually your entire economy, and to top it off, promoted the decay of your culture, values, and religion? I believe there will be millions of patriotic Americans whose first mental images here will not be of Arab countries or South Americans. Yes. Oh, good. Okay, I'm speaking loud enough. Okay. If you are, say, a native Nicaraguan and cannot find a job, feed your family because you have been blacklisted by your totalitarian government and its buddies at whatever Western multinational corporation is handing out the bribes that week, would you be inclined to view the accountants and other staff members back at the home office, say in New York, as innocent civilians? Remember, there is no way to attack an artificial entity. There is, in fact, no such thing as a corporation, much less a multinational corporation. The only tangible thing to attack is buildings, and the buildings are filled with innocent civilians. But buildings don't do anything. Buildings don't hand out bribes. Buildings don't buy up your country's resources and put your small independent business out of business. Buildings don't tell you that the land your ancestors have owned and farmed for generations is no longer yours, and that you must work at slave wages for them because they are the legal owners. Buildings don't seduce your young people with behaviors and fashions that are destructive to your values and your culture. People work in the buildings of those gigantic corporations. Foreign people, people eager to receive the lavish salaries and benefits doled out by the corporation, but not the least bit interested in how the corporation can afford to pay them such wonderful wages or what the corporation might be doing to people thousands of miles away in order to be so successful. Are the janitors and bookkeepers and secretaries and pilots and managers of these artificial entities innocent civilians? Are the people in a small country who tolerate corrupt government innocent civilians? Have they any responsibility for allowing corrupt government leaders to be bribed and controlled by multinational corporate interests? Have these people no responsibility at all for their own plight? On which side of the innocent/guilty scale should we put such attributes as laziness, ignorance, apathy, cowardice, or lack of principle? Who is ready to play God? Which God? The one of the Old Testament or the one of the New Testament? Questioning the motives and honesty of the government is not well received by any Americans who consider themselves patriotic. Those who have spent years of their lives in service to their country, members of the armed forces, retired veterans, and especially anyone who has been wounded or lost friends or relatives in war, are understandably put off or even outraged by these kinds of questions. Yet, are the very people who should be the most interested and willing to do whatever it takes to find answers. While understandable, it is tragic when these people react with closed minds and a kill-the-messenger mindset. My country, right or wrong, was never a funny cliche. It was and is the height of moral cowardice. There are a number of Americans who know a good deal about corrupt behavior by the United States government at home and abroad over a span of many decades. This They can cite chapter and verse about the atrocities perpetrated against the people of foreign countries, as well as against Americans themselves, by the New World Order crowd, the World Bank, the IMF, and Western multinational corporate capitalism. Yet, some of these people are the violence against foreign people whose only offense may be that some terrorist may have been hiding out in their country. This is perplexing behavior on the part of people who should understand the motives of foreign terrorists far better than average Americans who know absolutely nothing except what is spoon-fed them by the talking heads on establishment-owned and controlled media. How can the symbolism of the attacks of September 11, 2001 be so lost on people? What was attacked? Buildings, the World Trade Center, and the Pentagon, the ultimate symbols of multinational corporate capitalism and its enforcer, the American military. The U.S. government loudly and immediately asserted that these horrific attacks occurred because the terrorists hate the American people and their freedom. But I ask you, if the terrorists simply hate Americans and their freedom, then why not wait until January 1 and crash the four hijacked planes into as many football stadiums? Such a strategy might have killed 100 times as many as the hated Americans. But this is not what happened at all. Instead, the targets seem to have been selected for their symbolic value, with the death toll being an almost incidental consideration. When human beings lose loved ones, especially due to violence, there is no way to minimize the tragic loss and emotional suffering. Tens of thousands of Americans suffered deep emotional losses and scars as a result of the traumatic events of September 11, 2001 in New York City and Washington, D.C. Many of these people are so filled with hatred for the perpetrators of these horrific acts that their minds are, understandably but dangerously, closed on the subject. There is no time for anything but vengeance and no patience for anyone. They are looking for someone to lynch, and the bad guys are in their sights. The government didn't see them coming, but somehow managed to finger them all within hours of the tragedy. Names, addresses, pictures, life histories, connections to the axis of evil. The whole ball of wax, ready-made for a lynch mob. Inconsistencies and questions surrounding the events of 9/11 and the so-called war on terror are abundant and troubling. Never mind, Americans are far too busy waving the flag to ask serious, intelligent questions. Too many labels have been pulled over their eyes. It is said that there is nothing like the fury of a woman scorned. I beg to differ. There is nothing like the self-righteous wrath of innocent victims, especially when canonized and justified by the government, their media, and tens of millions of their countrymen. They are innocent, and somehow their suffering takes the innocence so to extraordinary levels of sanctity that justify the most unsanctified attitude imaginable. They have been told whom to hate. The bad guys are, as usual, over there, and we are going to show them. We are going to hunt them down and kill them and the horse they rode in on, and anyone who may have fed them a hot meal along the way, just for good measure. Innocent civilians, of course, will not notice or likely care that them will change from week to week. Them is whomever the U.S. government fingers as terrorist of the week. This week, Afghanistan, next week, Iran, next week, Iraq, then Iran, then North Korea, then, well, who knows, Montana? Tragically, the American people may deserve to be hated, not for their freedom, but for breeding, feeding, and turning loose the biggest, meanest dog on the block. Americans originally acquired this big dog, the federal government and its military, in order to protect themselves and their property from potential intruders. However, over the last 200 years, this dog has grown into a monster that has laid claim to virtually the entire yard and half the neighborhood. Americans appear to simultaneously love and fear their pet protector. Average Americans spend more time working to support it than working to support themselves. They seem to have no will to chain up this dog, even when neighbors complain bitterly about the dog's trespassing, damaging their property, and upsetting their personal affairs. What are the neighbors to do? They can see this big, mean dog has turned its masters into its slaves and is eating its owner out of house and home. They have watched this big, mean dog stage phony fights with other neighborhood dogs just to drum up support for better food, higher fences at home, and more permission to prowl in the dark. The neighbors ask each other, how can the owners of this big, mean dog be so rude as to let it roam around the neighborhood, making a mess of our property? After all, most of them claim to believe in a God that teaches, love thy neighbor as thyself. Peace-loving neighbors want to feel sorry for the poor owners of this big, mean dog, but after all, the owners brought the dog into the neighborhood. They they feed it and then turn it loose to roam the neighborhood. They even make deals with some of the landlords, making it legal for this big, mean dog in certain neighbors' yards, even when the people do not want it here, even when its behavior is offensive and destructive of their customs. Some of the neighbors have strong religious objections to dog do. It's a C word. I'm sorry. I just don't like to use that word. To dog do in their yards. Is this so difficult to understand? What is left for these people to do but launch some kind of attack to get the attention of those who are housing and feeding this big, mean dog? When thinking of the dog's owners and handlers, words that come to mind are irresponsible, selfish, and bullies. Thinking of the neighbors, the only word that comes to mind is justified. If you're feeding the dog, please don't fall for the myth that you are innocent. Speaking of feeding that dog, when was the last time you stopped to figure out how much of your paycheck winds up in the dog's food bowl each week? Let's see, income tax, Social Security tax, property tax, sales tax, excise taxes, state and local taxes, licenses, fees. Are you walking the dog or is the dog walking you? Is this dog protecting you or does he own you? How many Americans have any idea that this big, mean dog has been up to in the neighborhood while they've been asleep? How many Americans understand or even care about the anger felt by many of their neighbors? Certainly, the upper classes of many third world nations have eagerly embraced Western values, but at what price? Apparently, there are still quite a few people in this world who would rather die than become corporate serfs, policed by the Western military, and forced to watch their cultural heritage sink into the cesspool of Western values. Contrary to the ignorant, arrogant beliefs of many Americans, there are plenty of have-nots in this world who have no interest in what Americans have. Until Western governments, banks, and corporations stop trying to, those who have not the capabilities to wage war on our terms will wage it on their own terms, which probably includes blowing up innocent civilians. Shall we then blow up their innocent civilians, blow up suspected terrorists, terrorist sympathizers, potential terrorists, the self-employed? I don't know. Lest we turn the land of the free and the home of the brave into a paranoid, and I'm going to leave out the word Nazi. He says a paranoid Nazi nuthouse because we just have different views on this. So let me read it my way. Lest we turn the land of the free and home of the brave into a paranoid nuthouse What we must blow up is this myth of the innocent civilian. And that's the end of the booklet. So I read an entire book in just two programs. Actually, just in two programs. All righty. Let's open the phone lines. Let's look at the, I hope he's not talking about my dog. No. No, DF, he's not talking about Nico. Nico is a sweet, sweet little boy. He's a very sweet little boy. Okay. Let's check and see if anybody's called in. And remember, you can call in with questions or comments at 646-787-1915. I want to share something else with you. I was reading, let's see, what am I reading? I have been reading yesterday and this morning. I always read every morning, but I have been reading a book. I read a book. What Doctors Fail to Tell You About Iodine and Your Thyroid. Now, iodine is a very, very, very important nutrient, mineral that every single organ in your body uses. And we are, as a country, well, as a world, notably deficient in iodine. And it does affect most of the iodine in your body is used by your, well, a lot of it, your thyroid uses about 5 milligrams a day, just that. Okay, it is used principally by your thyroid, your breast, your prostate, and other organs. So anyway, iodine is incredibly, incredibly important. So I'm going to share with you chapter 7 from the book, What Doctors Fail to Tell You About Iodine and Your Thyroid, because I felt that this was really a very, very interesting chapter. And there's also, I have a 19 or 16 page, it's called the Guide to Supplementing with Iodine, What You Need to Know to Get Started. If anybody wants this, shoot me an email at deanna@spingola.com or comment@spingola.com, and I will send it to you. Anyway, chapter 7 in the book, What Doctors Fail to Tell You About Iodine and Your Thyroid. Okay, and this is by, let's see who this is by. It's by Robert Thompson, Dr. Robert Thompson, M.D. Okay. And he's collaborated quite a bit with Dr. Brownstein and others. Okay. This is a bit of a catch-all chapter. I'm going to give you the formula to help detox your body of those halogens and mention a few of the other health challenges that are related to low iodine levels. Now, detoxification is something that we all need to participate in because we are surrounded by halogens. We are surrounded by toxics, whether they are in our food, our water, in the air. So we really do need to know how to detoxify. And iodine is very important in this process. Okay, detoxification. If you've read this far, you already understand that iodine shortfalls are closely linked to those toxic halogens that rob your body of its ability to absorb the iodine it so desperately needs. You also know that most of us are exposed to these toxins every day of our lives. It is difficult to avoid them. So we all want to know how to detoxify ourselves of those halogens and improve our ability to absorb iodine. So here is the simple: a good quality iodine supplement, preferably one that contains potassium iodide, sodium iodide, and a molecular form of iodine from sea vegetables. The high doses of iodine will help your body release the toxic halogen. Your health practitioner should be able to help you determine dosage. Most people need 12.5 milligrams up to 50 milligrams, but people with cancer may need even more. Use unrefined sea salt to help rid your body of bromine and rebalance your overall mineral status. Dr. Brownstein recommends 1 to 1.5 teaspoons daily. You can help the detoxification process by adding 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon of Celtic sea salt with 1 quart of water and drinking 3 quarts of this mixture daily to help draw out the toxic halogen. Drink lots of water to help flush out the toxins. Drink clean, filtered water that is free of chlorine or fluoride. A whole house filter or an under-the-sink filter will do the job nicely. Cold-pressed charcoal filters are the best. There are also handheld versions of water purifiers, some used for camping or emergency needs, those used by the military. I'm not really in favor of reverse osmosis water filters because they remove nearly all minerals from the water. The easy water intake calculation, divide your body weight by 2. So, if you weigh 150 pounds, you need 75 ounces of water a day. You need more in hot weather and when you're exercising heavily. Okay, now Dr. Daniel says that for every 60 pounds of body weight, you should be drinking a quart of water. So it's about the same thing. Take vitamin C, a powerful antioxidant that stimulates detoxification. Use only whole food molecular vitamin C, the most effective because it contains all of the dozens of components of vitamin C, not just ascorbic acid. Start with 100 milligrams and go up as high as 3,000 milligrams daily. Detoxification can be slightly unpleasant, but don't give up. In rare cases, some people experience pimples, skin rashes, or redness. These are signs that the toxic halogens are being released from your body. If you feel tired or achy, that means the detoxification is working. Drink more water. Take more whole food vitamin C. And most importantly, don't give up. The detox blues will pass, I promise. Okay, let me just look in the chat room and see what, okay. Yes, bromine is in food, but my gosh, it's all around us. All around us. Let me just take a drink of mine. Today I'm drinking a cleansing probiotic tonic with apple cider vinegar, red beet, and it's made by Kavita Tonics. And then I'm also drinking my water. After reading this, I also added the salt. Now, I've done some salt loading procedures in the past, but the salt, if you drink a little, I put 1/4 teaspoon. I have 4 containers, 32, well, I do 2 quarts of water. And so I have 4 containers, put 1/4 teaspoon of salt in each container. And I fill up my containers every morning or even the night before, so that they're all ready. And in one container, I put trace minerals, and I use Buried Treasures, which is available at Amazon. And I use 2 tablespoons in one container. And then in another container, I put magnesium. And I put Relight, which is something that I get from Dr. Dean, in another container. So I kind of space things out. I don't put everything in one container. And then I sip all day. I drink all day. that doesn't sound good. I never drink alcohol, ever. Teenager, we all experiment. And I did I did drink some alcohol as a teenager, but I don't drink coffee. I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke. I'm a pretty boring person. Okay. Mer says, hydrate using 1/2 gallon per 50 pounds body weight before. Oh, yes. I read her turpentine statement today. Right. Yeah. I have her document on turpentine, Dr. Daniel's turpentine document, which is very good. And I do use the pink salt, which is very good. Okay, it's best to use veg caps instead of gelatin caps. The veg caps seem to release the salt more slowly into the stomach. And the gelatin caps, the veg caps are more expensive. But, and I do have a couple of little capsule-making machines, and whenever I'm just listening to something, I don't want to waste time, so I'm either making capsules or going in the kitchen or whatever. But, okay, so back to this book, and it is called What Doctors Failed to Tell You About Iodine and Your Thyroid by Robert Thompson. Let me just take a drink of my liquid here. Sorry, but oh, so good. I just, beets are very good for you. Okay. And as I said, I'm drinking this cleansing probiotic tonic with apple cider vinegar, and it's a red beet. So it's yummy. So yummy. Okay. And to the book, diabetes. And when I read this part, I naturally thought of Mike Piper. Now, Mike got diabetes fairly recently, before, you know, a couple, maybe 2 or 3 years before he actually died. And I believe that he probably was, although the doctor stated that he was noncompliant, I think he probably was receiving treatment for his diabetes, which, of course, led to his coronary problems. But anyway, says, correct iodine levels have been studied and proven to improve blood glucose control in people diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Furthermore, correct iodine levels can also minimize the risk of heart disease that often goes hand in hand with diabetes. Let me just check the mail here. Okay. Alrighty. Okay. Alrighty. Now, this book, What Doctors Fail to Tell You About Iodine and Your Thyroid, is available. It's a Kindle book. It's available at Amazon. I don't think it's very expensive. Now, if you want the iodine, the 16-page iodine paper, how to take iodine, that is free. I'll just email me and I'll just send it to you. But the book itself is a Kindle book. Okay, so furthermore, correct iodine levels can also minimize the risk of the heart disease that often goes hand in hand with diabetes. All righty. Excuse me. Iodine attaches to insulin receptors and improves glucose metabolism, which is good news for people with diabetes, or even people who think they may be a candidate for diabetes. I think it's very important that you take sufficient iodine so that you can kind of counteract this. Anyway, there's a researcher, Dr. Michael Donaldson of Hallelujah Acres Lifestyle Centers, who says iodine attaches insulin receptors and improves glucose metabolism, which is good news for people with diabetes. Heart disease. Diabetes and heart disease are closely linked. Since we know that diabetes is linked to low iodine, we can also forge the connection between low iodine levels and heart disease. Recent research from the University of British Columbia confirms the link between iodine insufficiency and cardiovascular disease. Dr. Donaldson says, and I quote, "Iodine stabilizes the heart rhythm, lowers serum cholesterol, lowers blood pressure, and is known to make the blood thinner. Iodine is not only good for the cardiovascular system, it is vital. Sufficient iodine is needed for a stable, rhythmic heartbeat." Now, talking about lowering cholesterol, you don't need to lower your cholesterol. You need all the cholesterol that your body creates. And that was just a farce by the government. The pharmaceutical industry they changed the standards for what people's cholesterol should be. They wanted all these people to be taking cholesterol-lowering medication, which causes Alzheimer's, all kinds of terrible things. Really, really bad things. 50 years ago, let's see, what was it that Dr. Daniels said? 50 years ago, 6 people a year typically died from dementia or Alzheimer's. And now, thousands upon thousands die each year of Alzheimer's since this cholesterol-lowering farce was introduced in the late 1970s. Okay, joint and muscle pain. Joint and muscle pain, chronic fatigue, and fibromyalgia have all been linked to hypothyroidism. That's an underactive thyroid. By extrapolation, they are closely linked to iodine shortfall. Muscle pain and achiness have been reported in medical literature for more than 100 years. And doctors have reported improvement in the symptoms of fibromyalgia when thyroid deficiency is treated. People with chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome, which is CFIDS, and fibromyalgia often share a basket of symptoms that most always include muscle pain, joint pain, and profound fatigue. In his book, Overcoming Thyroid Disorders, Dr. David Brownstein notes that numerous studies show that many people with fibromyalgia and CFIDS also have hypothyroidism. One study, 63%, and another at 50%. And Dr. Brownstein writes that his experience with patients with fibromyalgia and CFIDS shows that more than 80% have clinically validated hypothyroidism. Conventional medicine doesn't recognize this link, said Dr. Brownstein, because doctors rely on the TSH, the thyroid stimulating hormone test, alone to diagnose the disease. That test is woefully insufficient. So relatively few people are actually correctly diagnosed with hypothyroidism. Well, let's check the call screen. Nope, no calls. Okay. And he said, "It is my belief that in many individuals, fibromyalgia develops as a chronic disorder after a long period of untreated hypothyroidism." Dr. Brownstein writes, well, that's what he said. Okay. Other thyroid experts have noted that the rise in diagnoses of CFIDS and fibromyalgia coincide with the time the T came into widespread use in 1980, leaving large numbers of patients with undiagnosed hypothyroidism. Fortunately, fibromyalgia can often be reversed when thyroid insufficiency is treated, and it's most often treated with iodine and thyroid hormones. Grandma used to use it on every cut and sore quite effectively, but also quite painfully. Iodine is still used today in hospitals to prevent infection, particularly before surgery, when surgical sites are liberally painted with an iodine solution. Supplemental iodine has strong antimicrobial effects without the sting. Dr. Guy Abraham says, "In sufficient amounts, iodine can not only adjust a dysfunctional thyroid that can assist with the with a host of glandular imbalances, as well as a wide assortment of internal as well as external bacteria, fungi, and viruses. Iodine has many non-endocrine biologic effects, including the role it plays in the physiology of the inflammatory response. Iodides increase the movement of granulocytes. That's a tough word. Say that three times. Into areas of inflammation and improve the phagocytosis of bacteria by granulocytes and the ability of granulocytes to kill bacteria. And granulocytes, let me just post that word in the chat room. I have no idea how to pronounce it, obviously. You know, readers often mispronounce things because they just kind of glaze over it. They just kind of skip them. So people who read a lot often do that. But what can I say? Okay. And here's the name of the book also. Okay. All righty. Oh, dear, dear. Let's see. I'm just reading some of the... Okay. Let me just share some comments here. In the book, we read that 90% of people not having the optimal amount of iodine in their bodies. And if we then... Okay, hang on. Scroll up to finish reading this. And if we then want to get the idea if we are missing iodine, probably how much, then on the side 8, we get 25 questions. As for example, this one, I have high blood pressure and high cholesterol. And then depending on the number of plus to the answers we read, where we probably are standing. Okay. Okay. This Thompson daily takes 50 milligrams, which is what I take. I've been taking 50 for, oh, probably a year and a half. I started taking iodine maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but I was only taking 12.5. And I take Iodorol, and it's Thompson, Dr. Thompson also recommends, let's see, he does not recommend Iodorol, but he does recommend another brand. Merce says, historically, as early as 1911, people normally took between 300 to 900 milligrams daily without incident. And on this, Dr. Abraham notes that iodine has been taken for breast cancer as high as 6 grams a day without negative effects. And besides, Japan's island of Okinawa, people eat just in their diet, their daily diet, between 80 and 200 milligrams of iodine. And there are a lot of people there that are over the age of 100. More people are over the age of 100 there on Okinawa than any other place on the earth. Okay, and that is from the book. And thank you for sharing that. I think that's in another part of the book, too. But that, thanks for sharing that. Like granules. Granulocyte. Okay. Okay, thanks, Five. Oh, I love the chatter. They are so helpful. Really are. Okay. Wow. 6 grams is 6,000 milligrams. Thank you, Mer. Whoa. That, okay. The brand that he recommends, I will post that, but it is at the very back of the book. I looked at that, and I was already taking the Iodorol, which is what Dr. Brownstein talks about, Iodorol. So I think as long as you get it, but the reason that he recommends this other, the other iodine is because it has all three of the particular iodine compounds in it. So anyway, okay. Okay, asthma and lung disease. Several studies show that supplemental amounts of iodine can reduce viscous bronchial secretions in adults and children with asthma. Now, I have friends, a friend who uses an inhaler, tried not very frequently, but this is iodine is very good for asthma. The research suggests that iodine helps calm the autoimmune response that triggers asthma attacks. Okay, I have a Skype message. Okay, all right. It's from Clint. Okay. Alrighty, by keeping the mucous membranes healthy, iodine greatly helps to overcome autoimmune diseases, sinus problems, asthma, lung cancer, and other lung problems, and also intestinal diseases, including inflammatory conditions and cancers, writes Walter Last, author of The Natural Way to Heal. Very interesting. Okay. About Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. Researchers from the University of Victoria, British Columbia, created a fascinating theory of the disease family tree, hypothesizing that deficiencies of iodine lead to what appears to be hereditary disease in humans. Mer, would you look in the back of the book and maybe post the kind that Dr. Thompson recommends, if you have it handy. Otherwise, I'll grab it. Okay. Alrighty. Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. Researchers from the University of Victoria, British Columbia, created a fascinating theory of the disease family tree, hypothesizing that deficiencies of iodine lead to what appears to be hereditary disease in families. Just a repeat here. They wrote in a pivotal 1987 study, deficiencies of this essential trace element appear to be associated with many diseases or birth defects, including goiter, cretinism, multiple sclerosis, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and cancer of the thyroid and nervous system. They continued, although the evidence is weaker, iodine deficiency may also be implicated in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. Insufficient iodine appears to interfere with the body's ability to manufacture brain chemicals. Later research shows that Parkinson's and ALS, both diseases affecting the dopamine receptors in the brain, occur more frequently in low iodine areas. A study published in the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine in 1999 suggests that long-term iodine deficiency permanently impairs the dopamine receptors in the brain, opening a pathway for neurological diseases. Okay, the inability to sweat and the risk of of heat stroke. Since 20% of the body's iodine stores are located in the brain, low iodine levels impair the body's ability to sweat. When you can't sweat, you get overheated and risk a heat stroke, which can be life-threatening. Now, I don't think I'm being too personal here, but Mike and I were having a discussion, and I was an email discussion. I was talking to him about my biomat, which I use in the winter on my bed, and it's really a near red sauna, and I also have far sauna, and then I also have a near sauna that I set up in my shower. But what Mike said, and it just hit me when I was reading this book, he said that when he was in college, that he used to really sweat a lot. But that, you know, he didn't have any trouble sweating. But he said in the last couple of years that no matter how hot it was, that he just didn't sweat. And I don't know how we got in this conversation. I think we were talking about, he said something about sweat, and I said, well, women don't sweat, they get dewy. And so we had this conversation about sweating. And then when I read this comment that he told me that he could not sweat, I thought, okay, he was low in iodine. He was low in iodine. He was diabetic, which led to his heart disease. Could it be that if Mike Piper had started taking iodine several years ago, could that have helped him? Could that have prevented him from becoming diabetic? And could that have prevented him from getting heart problems? And of course, could that have prevented his death? But when I read those sentences, it really struck me. And I remember that conversation, that email conversation that we had. And he thought it sounded like a really great idea. But excuse me, let me just answer another Skype. Excuse me. So, anyway, I just thought that was very interesting, and I wanted to share that with you. All righty. Remember the book that I'm sharing with you, What Doctors Fail to Tell You About Iodine and Your Thyroid. Let's look in the chat room, and, okay, you don't have that book. Okay, let me try and find what I will try and find that real quick and let people know what he does recommend. But radiation detoxification. Worries about radiation poisoning are not far from the forefront of our consciousness these days since the tsunami in Japan destroyed a nuclear power plant releasing untold amounts of radiation. Potassium iodide, the iconic KI, is the go-to remedy to protect thyroids against radiation exposure in conventional medicine and in integrative medicine today, and for good reason, it works. Here's how. When sufficient healthy iodine is used, the thyroid and other receptors become saturated, leaving no room for radioactive iodine to take hold. I know that people who live near nuclear power plants in Southern California have been given potassium iodide tablets to keep in their homes and to be used when directed if there is a nuclear accident. I hope that is enough and that it's all they need. As I mentioned before, potassium iodide is also used to stop the toxic effects of radioactive iodine, used to kill thyroids of people who have extreme forms of hyperthyroidism, which is an overactive thyroid. If your iodine levels are correct, radioactive iodine will have minimal effect. Okay, migraines. Many migraine headaches are triggered by hormonal fluctuation. Okay, let me move ahead here. The right iodine. Okay, iodine testing. Hypothyroidism alone is reason to test for iodine deficiency. And I think everybody knows about the skin test. And their criteria is you take, they self-test. Let me just go to the skin test. Okay. Number one, on your clean forearm, swab a circle of the iodine solution roughly 2 inches in diameter. Leave it undisturbed for 24 hours. If the stain disappears in less than 8 hours, you desperately need iodine. If it disappears in 24 hours, you also need iodine. If it simply stays on your arm and begins to slowly fade in color after a full 24 hours, you have already reached iodine sufficiency. Okay, let me just move ahead and tell you, okay, which iodine he likes, and there's iodine in a lot of food. Okay, let's see. You also need to be taking selenium, 200 micrograms a day, thiamine, which is B1, B2, and magnesium, at least 200 milligrams, manganese, 10 milligrams. Okay, hang on. Let me just. Okay, Terry Natural. All right. Okay, let me just. Okay. All righty, let me just copy paste this into the chat room. All righty. Okay. That's what he recommends, and it's Terry's Naturally Tri-Iodine, and it has the three iodide compounds in it. All righty. Okay. Okay. All righty. I do recommend this book, and there's a lot of other books that also talk about iodine and thyroid. And in as much as everybody needs iodine, I think it's an important thing to look at because you really are not going to be able to detox, get rid of the bromine and the other halogens in your system unless you have sufficient iodine. So it's important to test yourself and to read up on it. And if anybody would like that 16-page document, and the name of the document is Supplementing with Iodine, then please let me know, and I will certainly be happy to send it to you. I did not write it. It was written by Stephanie Buist, and it's a terrific book, and it tells you everything that you need to know in 16 pages. A wonderful, wonderful book. So let me know if you'd like a copy of that booklet. It's a document. Alrighty, we are. Whoops. Oh, I goofed again. I'm sorry I didn't see the caller, 304. I'm sorry. I didn't look at the call screen. I should have an assistant that looks at the call screen. All righty. Thank you so much for joining me today, and we'll talk to you on Saturday. I have Dennis Wise on RBN, on my RBN program, and so I hope that you will join me then, and of course, next Monday. Thank you so very much for joining me today.
Starts with you and me.
It starts with you and me.
We are.